We're back here on In Focus. Brandon Peoples, joined by Cheryl Collins, director of the Riley County Historical Museum, and Alana Parker, who is the curator of design at the Riley County Historical Museum. We're talking today about where the adventure began, touring the hometown of the food explorers, David Fairchild and Charles Marlatt, who we've talked a little bit about. And we're also going to talk about Walter Swingle, who is the other person involved with this.
Yes, another really quite prominent food explorer. He brought a number of different foods back.
And he mostly worked with citrus fruits, primarily what he's known for is developing the taxonomy of citrus fruits. So he also worked very closely with Fairchild. And in fact, so they worked for the U.S. Department of Agriculture at the same time. But that's really where he made a name for himself was in the citrus fruits. But he was born in 1871, moved to Manhattan just 2 years after that, and helped, of course, here in Manhattan. Most people at that time, you were farming, so he worked very diligently on his parents' farm.
His dad was a county commissioner.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. And what's really neat is that you can read his diary from the time that he was working on that farm in Manhattan, so one of the earlier times in his life, and those are available through the University of Miami. So they have very kindly digitized that diary. So that was a wonderful resource for when we're working on exhibits or different programs, such as the driving tour, to find those examples. But many of the entries, you turn the page, watching cattle was what his duties were there. But that's neat to see a glimpse of what his life was like during that time. And then he did go to Kansas State Agricultural College. He was just 14 years old when he started in 1885, which is where he met David Fairchild. And then he received the offer for the job with the USDA. But because he was so young, he had to have his parents' permission to actually take that job with the USDA.
I think that family has an interesting connection, too, because they were related to the Varney family. And, of course, we had Varney's bookstore here for many, many years. J.F. Swingle, Walter's father, was uncle to Guy Varney, who started the Varney's bookstore.
Wow. So, again, another one of those neat connections of these individuals.
Interesting here. And I see that Walter's second wife was a daughter of one of the professors there.
Yes, Maud Kellerman, and her dad, Dr. William Kellerman, was a world-famous professor with a specialty in mycology or mushrooms. So I think that's really interesting how they connect in a little bit.
Excellent. You guys mentioned the book here. Is that available here for people to check out?
Yep. I think Manhattan Public Library has the book for checkout, and then the area bookstores also have it.
Okay.
And it's worth reading. Great illustrations. Some of the early ones were David Fairchild. He's experimenting with a knapsack sprayer, which is a neat photo. So he was just involved in all different things. And another interesting part of his life is he was married to a woman named Marion Graham Bell, which was Alexander Graham Bell's daughter. So his involvement and what he did in his career introduced him to different individuals, and one of those was Alexander Graham Bell.
I find it so interesting because, you know, that whole era from the late 1800s into the early 1900s, that's really, I mean, the Industrial Revolution was one thing here, but a lot of activity from then really shaped how our lives are lived today.
Oh, a lot of change. And, of course, in Manhattan, we got our first water system in the 1880s, and we got our first electric system. Our electric lights came on in Manhattan New Year's Eve, 1889. So 1890 was the first year Manhattan had electricity. Then turn of the century, you have automobiles, our first automobile in 1903. And actually, I think it's interesting, the first automobile was owned by a cousin of Guy Varney. Mr. Chummard had a delivery wagon that was the first automobile. So you're absolutely right. Telephones came in here in the 1890s. So things that conveniences and things that have changed our lives significantly really came in that period. So our lives are really different than the people who lived slightly before that. So David Fairchild started out life in a world that didn't have electricity and indoor water and telephones and all of that.
Wow. Yeah, and you mentioned, obviously, trains were pretty prominent back then. That's probably how they got all these shipments in.
Yes, absolutely.
And that's what's neat in the newspapers. Kansas State Historical Society has digitized Kansas newspapers, so specifically here in Manhattan. So if you have your Kansas driver's license, you can go onto newspapers.com and look at
for free.
For free is the wonderful thing. Mm-hmm. It's free, and you can do keyword searches. So not very long ago, we did a program on the 1880s here in Manhattan, and learning about the different foods that became available during that time period with the advent of the railroad. So you had citrus fruits from California and from Florida being shipped here to Manhattan, and you can see that in the advertisements and in the newspapers.
So not only with transportation, availability was greater, but then David Fairchild and those food explorers were bringing in new types of things that also were more widely available due to transportation.
Right.
So it's kind of a revolution in eating.
Yes.
And how well received was that from the ag producers back then? Were they quick to get on that, or were they hesitant at first?
I think there were some hesitations, and that's one thing that is addressed in the book, talking about what worked for some farmers and what didn't. One of them was pineapple and the sizes of pineapple. So David Fairchild had introduced, it was a form of a dwarf pineapple, but farmers were more interested in the larger ones that we see today in the grocery stores. So that's just a very small example.
Right. If you're a farmer and you change your product, it's a risk. So mm-hmm. I think some of these foods worked, some of them didn't.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's really cool. So the exhibit you have at the museum, that's open for a little while longer.
It's at the Manhattan Public Library in the foyer there when you walk in, so those south doors or north doors there. And that will be on display until this Wednesday. So we'll be taking that down this Wednesday. But there are some great photographs and neat information on the three individuals specifically that we spoke about today, Fairchild, Marlatt, and Swingle. We also have some artifacts to help illustrate those stories as well. So as we mentioned, the cherry blossoms that are in Washington, D.C., we have a beautiful painting by, her name's Gertrude Tietrich, and that name might sound familiar to some listeners. So she owned a costume shop here in Manhattan, made over hundreds of handmade costumes, but she was also an artist. So we have a beautiful painting of hers of the tidal basin there in Washington, D.C. with those cherry trees. So using some of those collections of the Riley County Historical Society to help tell that story.
Folks can also visit the Wolf House Museum, which has an interesting Fairchild connection.
Yes, the Wolf House Museum, and you have to kind of navigate some
right.
of the
because
closed roads
Juliet
there.
Street is torn up, which we're very pleased about because we love having that historic brick street repaired. But you have to come to the Wolf House on the alley or just park on the street on Fremont in front of the house. So, but the Wolf House was a boarding house in 1895 when the Fairchild home, presidential home, on K-State campus burnt down. And the Perry family that ran the boarding house were Congregationalists and close friends of the Fairchilds. So the Fairchilds, President and Mrs. George Fairchild, moved into the Wolf House, or what we call the Wolf House today, and lived there. So they lived there from 1895, I think, until George Fairchild lost his job as president of K-State in that ruckus that occurred in 1897. So that's kind of an interesting connection. And of course, the Wolf House Museum is interpreted as Manhattan home life in the 1880s. So it's really kind of a step back into David Fairchild's world and the world that his parents would have known living in the Wolf House Museum, which is at 630 Fremont. It's open Saturdays and Sundays, 2 to 5, and it's free.
Cool.
And then again, mentioning those newspapers, we were able to find one. David Fairchild became somewhat of a local celebrity here, it seems, and there's one section in the paper where one of the Perry daughters was having a birthday, and they had a surprise guest by David Fairchild who stopped by to see her. So that was kind of neat to find those little connections there.
Wow. And obviously a much smaller community back then. I think the population I saw was only about 2,100 at the time they were here.
Yes, yes. In 1880, it was just 2,105 people. And Kansas State had an enrollment of 267. So it grew to by 1890. Manhattan had a population of 3,004, and Kansas State had an enrollment of 593. But that's a very small place. So folks in Manhattan all knew each other and knew of each other, I think, pretty much.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's take a break here. We'll talk more about the exhibit and more about some other things here with the Riley County Historical Museum. We continue on In Focus after these words on News Radio KMAN.